Welcome to Transformation Nation with your hosts, Jason Krantz and Jordan Morrow. Whether in your personal life, family, career, or more, each of us has the power to transform. Our episodes are designed to help empower everyone to transform into the person that they want to be. Jump into this episode to learn how you can become who you want to become. Hey everybody, how you doing? Jason Krantz here and my good friend Jordan Morrow. We have something special for you today. As you know, Jordan and I love the data analytics space, and we have an individual, a fellow data analytics aficionado with us. Jordan, tell us a little bit about today's guest.
Yeah, no, so I'm super excited about today's guest. It was about 3 years ago when I first got to meet Sean Price. And Sean Price, unfortunately, I'm not in person with him, which I would love. I've been in person with him many times out in the United Kingdom, which is where he is. But the first time I met him was about 3 years ago. And in that time, I got the opportunity to see him speak. We were speaking at the same event. And my goodness, was I captivated. And I loved it. I enjoyed it. And he and I became quick friends and got to work together for a while. And so, Sean, if I could, I'll let you introduce yourself better than me, and then we can just start into the dialogue and the questions. So, Sean, tell the people who you are, where you work, what you do, and we'll jump right in.
Yeah, so hello, folks, and thanks so much for inviting me on today. Absolute honor and privilege. And I follow you guys across the world and what you're doing, and very inspirational, and I connect a lot of the messaging that you're giving out. So it's a real pleasure to be here and talk some stuff with you today. I'm currently the VP of Industry Solutions for a global company called Infinity. And I'm also working as a Chief Strategist for Perfect Image in the UK partner. Two really exciting roles of two companies. And, you know, for me, again, about the whole sort of history of my career, guys, it's about making a difference. Okay, so with those companies I'm currently working with now, it's about making a difference to those customers and to the people and to the services and the public. Those people out there, the real people, and that's what, you know, drives me out of bed every day, thinking I can make a difference. And that really was, you know, going back further in my career, I worked in, you know, Click, but also Avon and Somerset Police, which is the foundation, really, of my career. 20 years in Avon and Somerset Police, really transforming their data-driven culture, you know, changing traditional ways of working, bringing technology and people together to drive a new way of doing business. And, you know, when you see what and how that can change people working in the organisation and the public you serve, and some incredible ways that analytics can you know, make good in the world, you know, that makes the heart, the hairs on your arms stand up. I haven't got much on my head now, as you probably noticed, we weren't on here, but the hairs on my arms are standing up now just thinking about the impact of analytics can have on day-to-day business. And that is why I am where I am today, speaking to you guys. It's exciting, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to ask, I'm going to lead off with a pretty big open-ended question. You said okay. Something that really hits home with me. This is one big reason we picked you as a guest, is because your philosophy wasn't, I want to work in finance, I want to work in data and analytics. It was to make a difference. So tell our listeners how you arrived as that being your career aspiration versus working as an accountant, et cetera. How did you arrive and come to that?
Yeah, so I guess it's an inner passion to do some good in the world, I guess. Being in, in fact, I've always worked in sort of good cause things, I guess, from policing through to public sector and healthcare, in Click, and just having that ability to do something exciting with technology and people is just a big draw for me. So. And there's things, I guess, that really bring that to life for me. And one of the most defining moments about how technology and people come together to solve some really tricky problems was, there was you've probably heard this before, Jordan, but a terrible murder. At the time, I was leading part of the serious crime review process. So understanding, you know, what happened, what can we learn, especially in a multi-agency environment, it's all connected. And at the same time as that murder occurred, you know, the day I went to see it on the incident report, we had an app in testing, a predictive app that was looking to understand the risk, offender risk, in the community. And that person, the murderer, the offender who committed that terrible crime, was top of the risk score and escalating in risk. And, you know, it dawned on me, I guess, as a defining moment, about, you know, if analytics is really built into the heart and rhythm of an organization, the daily tasking, the front line, you know, piecing together things that people just find it very, very difficult, and helping them make better decisions. So triangulating that risk, traditional ways and professional judgment with technology, you know, about bringing people and technology together. You know, I knew that was going to be pivotal in how, you know, we use data analytics and, you know, predictive stuff moving forward. So, you know, that is just deeply inspirational. You know, that is just hugely a passion that I've got now for everything I do is, can we change traditional ways for the greater good using data? Yeah.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Jason, any follow up?
Yeah. Well, you know, I've followed you for a while, Sean, and I love your content because, again, you come at it from a different angle. It's a very holistic approach in terms of how do these pieces serve that broader vision, right? I think that's very strategic, very smart. I respect that immensely. But one thing I love your data dog hashtag.
Yeah.
Where did you come up with this thing and how did that come to be?
Yeah. So I think firstly, I find traditional people working in technology, it could be a little bit, you don't really know the people behind it. And, you know, I thought to myself, actually, I want people to know a little bit more about me, and, you know, things that I do, and things that I love, because I think about relationships, you want to work with people that are genuine, authentic people, don't you? So I thought, do you know what, I'll give a little bit of my life back into my profession and always try and connect it to, you know, some working practice or strategy or culture, whatever it might be. So I'm always sort of thinking during that time walking data dog about, you know, what's really important in the world. So, I mean, connecting with people to get out and exercise more, look after their well-being. So, you know, #datadog is my rock really around getting out there, you know, kicking the football around and really being, you know, getting the adrenaline and you know, the blood flowing before you a busy week. So, and also I find that dogs, guys, can really lift a room with their energy and charisma. And it's a metaphor for what analytics needs. We need things to be exciting. So when you stop talking about the data and what it can do, but actually show people.
Yes.
And this is about a fundamental part of the blueprint to create a sort of exciting, hair tingling, transformational experience with analytics. And #datadog, you know, he's there to help me do that in a way, because he's a metaphor for lifting things in terms of energy and what have you. I remember a very, very terse, very difficult police authority meeting. So police are held to account in the UK by, you know, people that were elected in to, you know, from the public or politicians, councillors, etc. And they would give the police a huge scrutiny. And I was working governance and performance, and always very difficult meetings, always got such a pounding of difficult questions. It was nothing ever was good enough, you know. And one day we brought one of the sniffer dogs in and, you know, bounded in, and it lifted the room, and it really created an energy, and it was much more constructive, much more collaborative. And I think it's the same with, you know, general workings. We need to find new ways of creating energy that can be a positive good. And, you know, for me, Datadog does it. So, you know, and he's a really good PA. He's one of the best PA. He does my emails, you know, he does my calendar. He's just brilliant.
Love it. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you mentioned a couple of things there that I absolutely love, which is, like, you know, the balanced perspective and approach, you know, and that's one of the things, as I was talking about Jordan, we love about what you do and the way that you approach things, because you're right. It's not just about data. It's about the experience with data, delivering results that requires maybe something that is beyond the realm of what we typically talk about in the data and analytics space, but that requires new perspectives to accomplish all of that, both personally and professionally. So I commend you for that, my friend.
Thank you. You're too kind.
Well, with that, Sean, I want to follow up. How do you, with everything you're doing, one of the things that I think people ask about people who are succeeding in their career is, how do you balance it all? How do you make this work? So with you and your family, you have great balance. And I like to actually call it harmony over balance, because balance denotes you either have it or you don't. Whereas harmony means at times you can have it and not have it. So what are some of the things that you do that you could give our listeners on how you achieve that harmony with your family, with your busy schedule, with your job, and of course with Datadog?
Yeah. And yeah, everyone's different. So it's absolute right for one sort of, you know, magic bullet for this. But I think firstly, I treat well-being as a strategic imperative. It's as important as everything, and all my work is as important as that. And, you know, I know that if I look after that kind of end of it, I know that I'll be super effective at what I do delivering at work. So I think just the importance of it, rather than it's just something I'm trying to squeeze in or something I'm doing. But how do you do that? So the practical elements are kind of super clinical and efficient in how I manage my business, you know, my emails, meetings, plan ahead really well. So I kind of almost shape and frame. It's just part of my work. My work and life is all blurred into one through that sort of efficiency angle. And I also do choose to turn off. So, you know, I will say, well, I'm not going to be answering my emails this weekend. On holiday, I don't touch my emails. And, you know, it's actually managing expectations of those people, your bosses or who you're working with. And building relationships so people understand you as a person and how you operate. And of course, you know, if things really need to be done and, you know, you need to work 24 hours a day, whatever, then that's fine. You know, that's not a problem. But I think it's about managing yourself, managing your colleagues around you just really well. And that helps me to invest in my core well-being kind of aim.
Nice. So one of the things I love that you're talking about in there is shutting down. If we could get all of our listeners to do that, that would be amazing. One of my favorite hacks, listeners, is when I go to sleep at night, put your phone on airplane mode. And then when you wake up in the morning, write in your journal, get your workout in. I think what Sean said there was so paramount to actual success in life. Don't make well-being something you fit in. Make it a priority, because then everything else can fall into place. Did I get that right, Sean?
You've got that exactly spot on. And it's the same as analytics. Make the parallel to that. Analytics is a strategic imperative. It's not nice to have. It's critical for your business. And it's the same kind of thing, really. Same philosophy. If it's important, then it will happen. And, you know, I think that's the sort of fundamentals of it, really. And by the way, you know, turning your phone off, you put yours in airplane mode, Jordan. I give mine to Datadog and he does my work in the evenings and night. So, you know, there's always different ways of doing it, isn't there?
Absolutely. I love it. I wish my dog would do that for me. Mine's just sitting outside my office door right now, probably wondering, why don't I get a chill with these guys?
No, I love, too, the idea of setting limits. I think that's really important, because by having clarity on what matters and then articulating, you know, kind of what is that priority, but then setting those limits, you know, using email as an example. I'm with you. I batch emails where I only look at emails at certain times in the day, because otherwise it can get overwhelming. Same with LinkedIn. I'm doing that now where I batch that. But what that does is that allows you to prioritize effectively and find the time and make the time for those things that are a priority. Because if you're not careful, those things can consume your entire day. And at the end of the day, you're like, what the hell did I get done today? Yeah. And if you're just wasting your way on these little things here and there, it could be, you know, kind of overwhelming. One thing, Sean, I wanted to get your take on, and Jordan and I talk about this a lot. It's a little tangential, but related to the data analytics space. And I talk about it a lot because I feel very passionately about it. But one key area within data analytics success is the soft skills. Yeah. So as we look at this, what are the top soft skills that you think a data and analytics leader needs? What kind of gaps do you see in this area?
Yeah, I think I think the biggest blocker for organizations is leadership, collaborative leadership and relationships in the data space. I think it's being able to engage and be influential with the senior leadership, and the senior leadership being able to understand, empower, support, and be part of walking the talk across the analytics space. So I was very lucky to have built, with my chief constable, Andy Marsh, back at Avon and Somerset Police, we were walking hand in glove around the importance and how analytics could be delivered. He was telling a story. In fact, he got better than me understanding what we could do. That for me was fantastic to see. I think, unless you get that top leadership, it's not about ticking boxes. This is about living and breathing something so powerful in an organization. So I think collaborative leadership and building relationships, understanding that business. So, actually, when I say that, I mean getting out there and feeling the pain on the front line, whatever your front line is. Feel that pain about what worries people when they go to bed. Ask those questions about how can I make your job easier? For example, you might have an investigator looking at child cases. They might worry every night, have we missed something? Have we missed something in the data somewhere? One of our systems that could create some serious harm. They literally would worry about stuff like that. So I would be saying, look, how can we make you reassured by joining the right data, providing the right context, doesn't go on holiday, doesn't go to sleep? How can we get it there, showing things when they happen, alerting you, intelligent sort of way of providing data, actionable insight and all that kind of stuff. And that is about really getting out there and understanding it. It's not about compliance metrics. That'd be part of it. But, this is about doing the right thing for people that are making decisions and actually bringing the money in or solving the issues in the communities that you work. So building a narrative on how analytics and people and technology come together, living that and being part of that is I think hugely, hugely, hugely important. And I don't see it enough. I don't see collaborative working around the analytics space as much as I think I'd like to, really.
And let me kind of like that next level question. Let me ask why. Why is that? Do you think we don't see that? Because I agree with you. I 100% agree. We do not. I personally do not see that enough. And I think that is a major hurdle to broader analytics success. Depending the definition of success will differ. But one of those where it's making a strategic difference. Why is that?
Yeah. So I think it goes back to traditionally that data projects are run by data people. and, it's separate. I mean, I've been in meetings where you'd have people who've been working in IT departments that would have absolutely no idea of how a business would run and how what happens at a tasking meeting in the morning. What's actually really going on about all that rest of that organization around you? And they'd be isolated in that so that they're not kind of, you're not joined together. So I think one of the biggest issues is that, IT and business need to come together a lot more. And they need to have a common purpose around that strategic imperative. And it's not about, IT would traditionally give a lot of blockers. Business would want stuff that probably wasn't quite right, not safe. And it's working through all those things to build a truly collaborative way forward with deployments, really.
Man, this is like next level stuff. So I'm gonna ask a question that goes along with this. We're talking about leadership. We're talking about careers. Now I want to talk about, before I get into a funny question, but what is one piece, so for people that are trying to start their career in the data and analytics space itself, what are some of the things you would encourage them to do to get started?
Ooh, that's a good one, isn't it? So I think you need to be, to get started, I think you need to go out of your way to experience and give your skills and experience into the business that you want to start in, first of all, even if you've got to pay for it, but even if it's part of a placement and that kind of thing. So I think also not think you can go straight into the most senior role, and actually you do learn, experience and learn and develop. So a bit reflective around, you can't just jump into the great position that you want to be. It's a bit of an evolution, really. And so I think, you know, advice for someone wanting to get into the space is building relationships and offering your services and actually just trying to be part of something good. And there's a lot of good cause areas that would be probably quite willing to, you know, and the volunteering programs that they have is to get some of those skills. So I think there's kind of that angle to it. I think the other angle is all about, again, having not just those hard data skills, but the wider skills that we're talking about. So I think that's very much about building your business skills and your personal skills as much as you're building your technical skills. And I think that will make you a much more rounded candidate. If you think where technology is going, I mean, I truly believe that the differentiator in effective deployments will be people's creativity about applying technology. Yep. A lot of it's going to be automated. You know, if you talk about predictive modeling, yep. I'll say, can you build me a predictive model of XYZ? Yeah. You know, I think we're not that far away from that kind of thing. So I think, you know, it's about understanding the creativity skills is going to be a bigger part than what it is now.
I love that. And I'm just going to, I have this question a lot, and I have this conversation with a lot of people that are very intimidated because they think that they've got to have a PhD in all of this, you know, programming, mathematics, all this stuff. And kind of to your point, I don't mean this in a derogatory sense at all, but that programming and things like that is becoming more commoditized. It's not to say it's not valuable, but there's, you know, if AI achieves 1/100th of what it's, you know, being pitched as, in a few years, you will be able to do those things. And so you won't need as much programming experience to be effective with data. And as a result, it's more, okay, how are we going to use this? How are we going to use this to influence change? You know, and that's where having that business perspective, that business lens, and having that creativity that comes with it, right, can be extremely influential and game-changing. So that's where I tell a lot of people, you're actually not as far behind as you think you are. And that jump to being effective with data is actually quite small because, as I say a lot, you can kind of shortcut your way on the technical side in certain realms. You know, there's Stack Overflow, the magic of Google, whatever it is. There's shortcuts. There's no shortcuts to business experience. You just got to get it, right? And that's where I tell them is that you actually have a significant competitive differentiation versus your peer set, you know, in the future when you're looking to use data for better decision-making.
Absolutely. Spot on. And, you know, I think the more, come back to the leadership angle of this, the more we can work with and help support, coach, you know, leaders in the world that don't necessarily know everything about this kind of thing. I think we'll get a lot more effective results coming from it. Mm-hmm. I do truly believe that, you know, we should have some really good, cool ways to engage these leaders that traditional ways might not be able to penetrate that kind of sort of psyche, but there's got to be some better ways of doing it, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that I'll touch upon real quick, and this is something we talk about in the data literacy sphere all the time, is creativity. I think people are losing sight. I'm grateful that it's gaining steam. In the past, they were losing sight that, you know, the data and technology, and Jason, I don't think it's bad to say at all that a lot of these things are being programmatized and commoditized for us, easing it in. Like, think of Alteryx. Think of the Alteryx software, which simplifies data science for people. Now, it's not to say, you know, that people shouldn't learn and shouldn't get technical skills, that those aren't going to be important, but we also have to realize that some of the most important skills, like think of the field of data storytelling, it's one of the fastest growing in the entire industry right now. And I think that we can't lose sight that that's something that people have to hone in on. We talk about soft skills all the time. In fact, I had someone bring up to me the other day, they thought soft skills made up a lot of the data literacy side. I said, yeah, it's a large chunk of it. There's a lot to it, but that's actually a large piece of it. And so I think we can't lose sight of all of those things. I think Sean said it really well. As we do that, it makes it much easier for us. And I'm going to piggyback that to one of the soft skills that I think we're going to make Sean blush a little bit here. But when I saw him speak 3 years ago, your ability to public speak, to capture attention and to bring to life different things from a data and analytics perspective was amazing. So one of the things that a lot of people ask me, because I public speak all the time, is how do you do this? How it's just natural. How do you do that? Well, first, they don't understand. I've done hundreds and hundreds of hours of practice in public speaking. It takes time to get comfortable doing it. But like for you, did you do anything different or special when you developed your skills? Did it come naturally to you? Anything along those lines within the public speaking sphere for you?
Yeah, sure. So I started off, going through teenage years and into my early career, incredibly shy and really not great, actually. I think there's a few defining things that kind of shifted and shaped. I think firstly, yes, practice, and being fearless and not being able to not worry about, I'm going to do it, I'm going to try it. So be fearless in your kind of approach to it, but practice, hundreds, maybe thousands of presentations. I have no idea. I don't count them, but maybe I need some sort of analytics dashboard for them. I don't know. But I think firstly, the defining thing was the mindset around the excitement that you feel rather than how nervous you feel. So my other half, she said, look, you know, it's going back a while now. She said, look, say it's exciting. Say it's exciting. You train your mind to think this is an exciting process. And, you know, actually it released. Actually, it is exciting, isn't it? And it very much, and I sort of connect, and a passion for your subject matter. And if you've experienced your own personal experience, bringing that to the table and not being afraid to be yourself, I think, on stage. So, you know, I'd have people say, well, we need to do it like this. We want a canned way of doing it where we, you know, we'll read it off or whatever it might be. And that. So look, I just don't work like that. And I do create a few crazy things. So, you know, I'm going to jump into the audience. I'm going to talk to them about something. I'm going to get that. I did a webinar the other day for Rick Consulting down in on one of the Click Tours. And, you know, I really excited to stand up. I did a massive leg kick halfway. Who does that on a webinar? I thought, why have I just done that? But I thought, well, actually, it's me, you know. And I think, well, you know, it's what you're going to get. And you know, not everyone will like it, but that's fine, you know. And I think that as long as one person takes away a great idea, for me, that's success. You know, they've changed something in the world and they've been, you know, and I think that's just really important to be reflective, that you don't have to be perfect. Things might go a little bit wrong, but that's okay, you know. So mm-hmm. You know, I think fundamentally it's just I've created through mindset an inner burning passion of where, you know, I literally feel like I'm on fire when I get on the stage these days. I'm missing it, you know, guys. I'm missing getting out there. I'm doing it online, but that's great. Yeah. I could do some leg kicks, but you know, handstand maybe next. I don't know.
I would pay good money to see one else.
Yeah, well, I'll do one now for you. Hold on. I'll do two.
I can hear
the left
power.
And right. It's the right one. I'm hoping.
Well, this is the first live leg kick on our podcast. We'll put it up. The first one.
And, yeah.
You've got two for the price of one. And I did a right and a leg. Right and a left. And when I took, this is another thing, you know, and doing things, you think, well, actually, when I went down to present for a partner, I took Datadog, and it's a big risk, you know, never worked with animals and children, yeah? So, but took Datadog on, and I got a member of the audience on the stage, trained Datadog. So I got him to get the treats, and he was, you know, doing all the stuff, and banged it on the stage, Datadog, and you know what, it lifts her. Matt's like, well, who would do that? Who would be stupid enough to do something like that? And you know, I did it, and I think you know, the more I go on this sort of stuff, I think, well, you know, I'm just gonna do what I think's just exciting or interesting. And I think that's you know, as long as you connect to what you're doing, but I think that's really important, isn't it, just to be a bit of a real person, really.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I tell you what, I haven't spoke publicly as much as you guys have, it sounds like, but this is the number one thing I have learned. passion is contagious. Passion gets people's attention because you cannot fake passion in my mind. Like, you can see through it, I think, pretty quickly. If you are organically passionate about something, people will see it. I remember at a company I used to work at, I was up presenting on economic insights for an hour. People didn't care, but they were like, you were so passionate. It was so compelling. And they actually listened and they actually came away with something. But it gets down to the topic. You could have two people presenting the exact same content, but if that one person is bringing a passion, I'm gonna put my money at that person with the passion is connecting with the audience and getting them to listen and take something away with it. It's very clear that you are passionate about this stuff too.
I think I just pulled a muscle in my adductors actually doing those kicks, guys. It was the first of your podcast. An injury? Do we do a risk assessment?
First injury.
Who has a risk
podcast
assessment for online webinars? You know, I mean, has anyone ever thought about that?
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, I gotta ask you. Okay. Serious for a second. It's like, you know, you're an awesome guy. That's clear. But, you know, I want to know, what is the one thing you have done in your life to ensure that you are reaching your potential? What's that one perspective, right? Because it's easy to go a lot of different directions, but it's very clear that you're a focused guy. How do you do it?
I think appreciating what you've got. Is my first sort of thing. So, you know, I massively appreciate where I am in my life at any point in time and think, you know, it sounds a bit strange, but if I drop dead tomorrow, I think, do you know what? I'm a happy guy. And, you know, going out and connecting with the smaller things in the world and that kind of really important. So I think it's just being comfortable with where you are and what you do. And that, don't confuse that with a lack of ambition. So that's not about that, but I think it makes you relaxed about pushing forward. It doesn't put pressure on you to push forward. And you push forward for doing the things that you want to do and, you know, get the best out of the situation and the plan that you're trying to work towards. So, you know, I really do think that's key for me. I think another thing is not being afraid. I've talked about it, not being afraid to be yourself. And not worrying about that so much. And also the strength, I think, from dealing with some really difficult work and life events. I'm connecting all the time to the really, you know, sometimes quite awful things that you've done in your work or your life. And I'll start people crying here, guys, but, you know, I stood up when my mum died and I read the eulogy, okay? And huge meant a huge deal to me with my mum, and I stood up and I read that in front of, you know, hundreds of people at the church, and it was a life defining moment in the fact that it's given me strength every single point of time where I've been feeling difficult situations or you think, what's going to happen, how am I going to do, and actually I've drawn strength from some of those things. So that is, you know, those few things are kind of fundamental about reaching my own potential, really.
I don't know if there's any other way to end on a higher note, Jace. What do you think?
No, Sean, I really enjoyed the conversation, my friend. Thank you so much for coming on. We greatly appreciate it. Listeners, hopefully you enjoyed this conversation as much as we did. And yeah, thanks again, Sean.
No worries. It's been a pleasure, and keep up the great work, guys.
Awesome. Thank you much.
Thanks so much for joining us today on another episode of Transformation Nation. Please take the time to connect with both of us, reach out through our social channels, and start taking those first steps towards not only transforming yourself, but empowering everyone to become who they want to be. Until next time, this is Jason and Jordan. Go dominate, my friends.